Hello and welcome to Digital Careers Meets, part of Barton Rock's Digital Careers podcast, where we offer insights and advice to advancing your digital career, as well as making your digital hiring more effective. And in today's podcast, we're going to be talking about new retail and digital's time to shine and what it means for FMCG companies. And I was pleased to be joined by my guest, Sharon Hill, who brings a wealth of international FMCG and grocery retail experience to this podcast. She started her career in the UK with Mars in several sales and category development roles before relocating to Sydney, where she worked with Nestle and then moved into grocery retail with Woolworths, the national grocery retail chain. She rejoined Mars and moved into digital customer management in Australia before being transferred to the UK to head the company's digital channel for Mars's food category. So I hope you enjoy listening. So we're going to be talking today about a subject called new retail and digital's time to shine and what it means for FMCG, right? Before I introduce my guest, Sharon Hill, I just want to pull out a quote, actually, that Sharon and I have been inspired by, which has led us to come up with this heading, this subject to talk about, which is from Jack Ma, who is the founder of Alibaba, who Jack Ma, as Sharon has pointed out to me, is always ahead of his time, but perhaps even he couldn't have anticipated quite how 2020 was going to unfold. But a quote from him was, "Pure e-commerce will be reduced to a traditional business and replaced by the concept of new retail, which is the integration of online, offline logistics and data across a single value chain." And just by a quick way of introduction, I've given a bit of detail on my intro to Sharon, but Sharon brings a wealth of experience across FMCG as well as the grocery retail side, so is highly qualified to comment on today's subject. And Sharon is currently the head of digital for Mars's food business in the UK. So welcome to the show, Sharon.
Thank you, Guy. And look, I think that quote from Jack Ma is just amazing because it was from 2016. I think back at that point in time, any FMCG business that was looking at bringing into e-commerce into their platform was really setting up separate teams. And they were sort of carving out, if you like, resource and structure that suited growing that new platform. So for him to say back then that actually that's not the best way to organize businesses and that it needs to be fully integrated, it needs to be considered just the way that people shop, was really showing some foresight, which I think is quite fascinating. And I guess really what I wanted to chat with you about today is probably that realization that actually integration is the way. The likelihood of having one team or one person being able to drive an entire business's e-commerce opportunity, I think those days are gone. So it really needs to be everybody's remit. And I think that would be really great to explore that with you today and sort of have a conversation about, well, what does that actually mean? How can businesses get themselves set up for success? So interesting times. And as you said, we would never have expected the rise in e-commerce that we've seen in the last few months. We've seen growth that normally takes years. And whilst nobody wants that situation to have happened, if shoppers want to be able to shop online and they want to be able to have access to all of those products through an online platform, there is a responsibility to make sure they can get hold of them easily and quickly.
Now, as I said in the early part of this conversation, you bring the perspective of both grocery retail as well as the FMCG side. So how has that helped you become an authority on this? I mean, it's presumably brought you perspectives from both sides of the fence, which is incredibly helpful. So do you want to touch a little bit on, what you've done over the years and what you've seen from a perspective of e-commerce, almost setting the scene for this conversation?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think with retail, that my perspective would be, having worked for Woolworths in Australia, is that there's a scarcity of time and a real desire to make sure that they're delivering what shoppers want. How can we make our shoppers' journey easier? How can we ensure that we're giving them the best possible experience? And I think, coupled with the fact that they're moving at remarkable pace, so there isn't a lot of time for circular conversations or, questioning should we or shouldn't we? And I think certainly there's this desire to be bold and take the initiative where they can see that there's an improvement for a shopper. Yeah. Having said that, they're also obviously very mindful of their bottom line and then, not likely to want to take risks that would be dilutive against their overall margin. So I think where suppliers can really help, and where I work, you know, really well with a number of fantastic blue chip FMCG suppliers, is the suppliers can come with ideas. So ideas that, you know, enhance the shopper journey, with perhaps proposals to do test and learns, or some resource that a retailer wouldn't have access to, that can say, well, let's try this, let's try it in a few stores, or let's try it on the platform to see whether shoppers engage. So I think there's that desire to, you know, to give shoppers the best experience, but not a huge amount of time. So therefore, suppliers can come in with ideas, with proposals, with research, and put forward suggestions. And that's where I saw, you know, a really great partnership, with everybody focusing on what can we do to drive the category, and what can we do to drive the shopper's experience and make it optimum. So yeah, I think if you talk to a buyer, you know, they have hundreds of categories, or suppliers, I should say, hundreds of suppliers and products that they look after. So it really is being able to sort of funnel it down to the golden nugget ideas and take those forward.
So to frame the conversation today, I thought, you know, I'd dig out a few statistics, because these are, they're quite powerful, and they're quite telling. So one that I dug out was actually a quote, first of all, which was under 10 years ago, where this individual, this commentator, was talking about the myths surrounding online and it being a small opportunity. You've mentioned about shopper experience being a high priority, but it was skepticism about shopper experience, unprofitability, or lack of profitability for FMCG companies. Now, they've all been discredited sort of presumptions or forecasts, I suppose, at the time. But back in March 2017, online FMCG, according to one big research company, was 5% globally and 7.5% of total FMCG sales in the UK. And the one outlier was places like South Korea back then in March 2017, which was 20%, which is quite phenomenal because of the high mobile phone penetration, of course. And then in November 2017, the same research company predicted that global online FMCG sales would be 10% by 2025. And the UK was estimated to be 12% by 2025. Now, COVID has done, as you said earlier, it's compressed so much change and digital evolution and acceleration of digital sales into a matter of a 6-month period. But what's it going to do to the future of online FMCG, in your opinion, this last 9 months?
Oh, gosh, that's so look, if only we all had crystal balls. But I think from the categories that I've been involved with, and obviously it does vary category to category, see, you know, prior to COVID, we were tracking at about 10% of sales were going through online. We now at probably around 17-18%. And the other thing I think is growth. Again, we're tracking about, let's say, 7-8% growth year on year. And, you know, with some retailers, we're now in triple digit growth. So, you know, it's just been a step change, which you rarely see when you work in FMCG. You rarely see that absolute sort of disruption. So I think, you know, the question of what's the longevity of all of this is a big one, and certainly what a lot of companies are grappling with as they think about, well, how do we make sure this is an opportunity and not something that we, you know, miss out on? The statistics suggest that the majority of people that have shopped online for the first time intend to make it a regular way of shopping or platform that they use. So not a one-hit wonder. It appears that people that have started to shop online out of necessity have actually realized that it's something that is, you know, convenient, it works well, the platform's now set up to make it a really easy journey, and people will continue to shop. And it's interesting because you see a lot of older people, so age 60 plus, they're a huge proportion of who's shopped online for the first time. So that actually then talks to, well, you know, are you meeting the needs of an older shopper with your online platform, and sort of what does that mean in terms of demographics? So there's some quite interesting things to consider, but my money would be on this isn't a one-hit wonder. This will have longevity. I think this is a change in the way people behave, and therefore the importance of having, you know, a great e-commerce strategy and an online strategy, and how that's integrated into your entire business, is absolutely critical. And that's for sort of today, but more importantly is how are you going to be fit for the future, and what are you doing to make sure that in 2025 you've got the right products and, you know, promotions, and you've got the right setup to be delivering what's needed then. because I think this is onwards and upwards. So some stats to add to yours, which I mean, I just think is amazing. Tesco, this is, you mean, well documented, pre-COVID were delivering 600,000 orders a week. I mean, that's still quite substantial. They're now at 1.5 million. So in the space of, you know, 5 months, they've almost tripled the amount of deliveries that they're doing. And they're reporting, you know, 1.5 million new customers. Those stats never, you know, normally would be something that we'd be talking about. So, you know, it's quite phenomenal how the retailers have actually been able to react. And obviously you can see a lot of Amazon, Morrisons are reporting almost weekly that they're recruiting tens of thousands of new people to support these businesses. So it really is a fundamental shift.
Yeah, and it's probably worth just talking about the category that you're involved in, because online is probably lends itself well to bulkier items, you know, laundry, care, baby stuff, this type of thing. But what you're seeing is it's certainly having a major impact. And you talked about triple digit annual growth within your category. And it's food specifically for the Mars business, which excludes confectionery, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, it does. So, I mean, you're absolutely right that there are variances between different categories. So as you mentioned, things like laundry, pet care, baby and food staples do very well because they're part of people's shopping lists. So they're actually very easy to shop online and rather than lug around big bulky items. Obviously, there's huge convenience in having it delivered. And also you could argue that, you know, some areas maybe coming from a small base, so triple digit growth from a small base, because they've suddenly taken off. So obviously there needs to be some sort of consideration when you're looking at the numbers. But I think the overarching theory that I've put forward is that the growth has been unprecedented versus what we've seen in other years. And it's become, I think, something that businesses have started to realise it's important. So if you think pre-COVID, there was definitely recognition that e-commerce was part of the mix, and something that, you know, we needed to service and look after. But to be fair, if you're looking at a total business and 10% of your sales is coming from one channel, that's actually still quite small. So I think it was a consideration, but not really high up on everybody's priorities, perhaps apart from the few people that were really working on it day to day. There's also a consideration about, you know, would we bother to make new packs, or would we bother to do innovation, or should we trial new ways of working for something that's only 10% of our business? You know, therefore, don't spend the time and the resource. Whereas now, if it's nearly 20% of our business and arguably 100% of the profit that's being generated is coming from one channel, it gets a lot more attention. So I think that's the shift that's happened, regardless of the individual category performances or you know, where we started and therefore what the growth uplift has been. The fundamental consideration is e-commerce is much bigger now than it was 6-9 months ago. It's more important. We think it's here to stay, and businesses need to really be thinking about how do they embed it into their ways of working, their business processes, so that they're ready to keep supporting it as it grows. That's really interesting because it's become more significant in internally and externally, and it's getting more airtime, which, you know, for somebody that's worked in e-commerce for a while, you know, that's great news. That's something that, rather than it just being the domain of a couple of people or a few dedicated souls, it's become more of a business-wide opportunity.
I've read quite a lot about profitability of home deliveries, and that the retailers, certainly at the moment, it's not as profitable as people coming into the stores themselves. So how are they going to resolve that challenge, do you think, if this is a trend that you're anticipating?
Yes, it is a concern, I imagine, for all of them. And, you know, obviously we've called out Tesco's, you know, the growth that they've been able to achieve in terms of their delivery. And it is replicated across all retailers. And even, you know, retailers that I suppose we never anticipated would be involved with online deliveries, such as Aldi and Lidl, are partnering with sort of third parties to do their online. So it really is almost every retailer has realised that this is something that shoppers want. Absolutely, I think this is going to be a concern for them in terms of this large concept of last mile and the cost of what it takes to deliver the product literally to the shopper's door. I can't speak necessarily for what they're going to do in any great detail, but I imagine they will be looking to partner with their suppliers to help share the cost, if you like, if they've been able to ring fence what the impact of that cost is, and they'll be looking for support, I imagine, through their suppliers, and also no doubt looking for, you know, efficiencies wherever they can get them. One thing that will help is setting up, you know, bespoke fulfillment centres. So actually operating out of a fulfillment centre that only does deliveries is much more cost effective, yeah, I would imagine, than trying to operate out of stores. So I think there's, you know, a whole gambit, if you like, of ideas and initiatives that we're being put into place, given that we all expect that this is a shift that's not here to stay.
Yeah, well, I certainly won't put you on the spot any further, because we'll watch that space with interest, Sharon, yeah. And we'll let the retailers work on that conundrum. But let's talk a little bit about how you think companies should set themselves up to address what we're concluding is an opportunity. From your perspective, from an FMCG perspective, how do you think companies should set themselves up for success then? What does the new world look like in some ways?
Well, this is really interesting, and I suppose there is no right or wrong way. So I don't intend to stand here and say, you know, this is definitively what needs to happen. But I think the direction of travel is around integration, and around it being part of everybody's remit to drive the online business. 5-6 years ago, perhaps, it was probably different. So I think it was more of a niche, and it needed perhaps hot housing. So you needed to have a bespoke team of people that would drive the conversations internally and externally. But I can see a shift, you know, in the last 5 or 6 years, and certainly COVID has accelerated that further and more quickly, to say that if we're thinking about the work streams that go into delivering a manufacturer's products into a retailer, and we're thinking about in-store or online, they're effectively the same. And therefore, you don't need two different teams to be able to manage those, depending on where somebody is buying the products from. The work streams include, obviously, the account management. So the person that's doing the customer management. Then you've got things like category management. So how does the product show up on shelf? So what's the shelf strategy? You might have customer activation. So what are the promotions and the media that we're putting either in store or online? Again, all of these things from a shopper perspective need to be coordinated, and it needs to be one shopper journey. And therefore, really, to have these online ways of going to market embedded in your offline or your in-store activity is much more effective than trying to run two separate teams effectively doing the same thing.
So Sharon, how do you think companies should set themselves up from the point of view of capitalizing on the online opportunity in the future then? Is there a series of recommendations that you think companies should have?
I think, look, Guy, I think there's no absolute right answer with this, and every company will be different, but I think there are some critical aspects that is worth considering. The first area that I would be looking at, and certainly what I've done in my previous roles, is to form a plan. So, you know, it sounds very basic, but what is the North Star? You know, what are you aiming towards doing? And within that plan, to consider what resources do you need, what investment might you need, what are the ways of embedding into existing processes that you know might need to be put into place, and how are you going to measure performance? So those are some critical aspects, if you like, the foundation that needs to be established so that you can then move forward with some pace. Yep. Because if you haven't decided what resources you might need, and that might be, for example, buying an off-the-shelf digital package that can help you analyze how your products show up. If you haven't really been clear on who's going to take ownership for different aspects of the go-to-market plan, then obviously you're not going to be very well set up for success.
What investments have you seen FMCG firms make in this plan then? What are the things that, you know, you're sitting there as a CEO of or a CMO or a senior person within an FMCG, what are you seeing? Where's the money going essentially?
I think the things that were critical for myself, and it, you know, it made a fundamental difference to how we performed. The first one is the ability to measure your on-shelf presence. So if you think about it, within stores, you can obviously walk into a store, you can do an audit, you can send in field reps to record whether products are on sale or off sale, what range is available, where they are positioned on the fixture. And that gives you information that you can then use with your retailer to drive your business forward. Within a digital space, it's very hard to do that because it's dynamic. So it changes all of the time. And there's multiple different ways of accessing how your products show up. So depending on whether you search for a product, whether you go in through the taxonomy. And the experience is different for different people because of your history online. Mm-hmm. So to buy an off-the-shelf package, and there's some amazing companies out there that do this, that will give you reports of how often your products show up in search terms, what your availability is, what your pricing is, what your competitors are doing, how often you've been converted, so how often you've ended up in baskets. That level of data and information is invaluable, because it's only then that you can start to assess where the headroom is, where you're performing well, and where the opportunity for change is. It's costly, but it's vital. You've got digital asset management, so DAM. So how are you storing all of your content? Again, for efficiency, that's something that needs to be invested in. And a lot of these content storage options now integrate directly with retailers. So that again drives efficiency, because you can download your content, so your images, your descriptions, your titles, at a basic level directly into retailers. And then there's obviously the investment that you need to look at your performance. So can you pull shopper data directly from retailers or from Nielsen, IRI, to understand what your performance is online? So again, you're looking for where there are gaps in your performance, or where there's, you know, great growth and you want to capitalize on it. So there is a need for that kind of investment, and even just to get the content. So you need to be able to invest in an agency to get the right images, the right content.
Yeah, okay. So there's the planning part. Then what other recommendations are there beyond planning, in your view?
I think so once you've sort of got this basic rudimentary plan, and you've got an idea of where all of these, you know, aspects of what you need sit together and when they're coming. And the next thing obviously then would be to start operating. So, you know, where are you on this operational scale? With this, it's around having a conversation with the retailer and making sure that you're showing up well. So again, with a physical store, it's very easy to see, you walk in, that your product is on the shelf with the right label, customers can see what they're buying. That's something that needs to be worked on from an online perspective. So at the very basic level, you know, it's titles and content and images, but there's so much more that can be done beyond that. I think you might want to have a promotional plan. So how are you going to show up in terms of your promotions? Will you do online only promotions? And also advertising and on-site media is absolutely critical. So it's really how you're presenting your products to your customers through an online portal. The other aspect would be, are you going to venture into marketplace? So this is, I'm talking at the moment around working with the big box retailers, so the Tesco's, the Asda's, the Sainsbury's, but the other consideration would be, you know, what will you do with the pure plays? So eBay or Amazon, obviously Ocado. So again, that needs to be something where you would want to go out and have that conversation and start to drive that business.
And what about innovation? How's innovation going to be maintained, enhanced, as we see online sales growth? I mean, this is digital innovation as much as anything else we're talking about, right? And product innovation as well, I suppose, to some degree.
The key areas, I think, in this space is once you've got your plan and you've got the right resources available so you can start to track and measure your performance, and once you're starting to operate, so you're having those conversations with retailers and you're out there and your products are available for sale, the next stage then is, where are we taking this as a manufacturer? So are we going to, for example, look at direct to consumer? So is there an opportunity to directly with consumers? That might be one aspect of future forward. Another could be, what's our e-portfolio? So are we developing packs that are suitable for an online delivery? So you may want to take weight out, if that's a possibility, or you may want to pack in bulk. Amazon have you know, been for a long time looking at what they can ship in its own container, so they don't have to package up again before they send it on to the consumer. So they're looking for fuss-free packaging or ship-in-own container packaging. All of this needs to be brought back into manufacturers, and it needs to be developed and made. So those are the areas, I think, where businesses need to be thinking now, how do they want to be operating in 2 or 3 years' time, and putting the right plans in place. The other thing that I think is really interesting and still needs some work is just the connectivity of digital across so many different platforms. So whether it's social, how you engage your brand across all of these different platforms and drive conversion. So this really talks to how you use media and how you, I suppose, enhance the shopper journey so that the multiple touch points that a shopper might have are all connected. And that therefore can drive the category, can drive your brand, but it also makes that shopper journey so much more fluid, which is what they're looking for. So I think there's a lot more work to be done in connecting the ecosystem, if you like, between online and offline and social and digital media. So those, again, are things that need to be worked on now, test and learn trials, so that case studies can be built up that could be the way of working, you know, in 2 years' time.
Okay. Now, I was chatting to another podcast guest a couple of weeks ago talking about data and how to embed data into a culture. And he was talking about, well, it's not the responsibility of one function or one individual within an organization to sort of lead the charge, as it were. And I suspect for this plan that you've talked about, that three-step plan, the plan, operate, innovate, to make that happen, it's got to be a company-wide effort. So how do you pull that off?
Well, that's a huge question, and you're absolutely right. So really, data effectively is a new currency, but I don't think that that many people, certainly within FMCG, have really understood, but not necessarily worked out how to harness it. So I can certainly say from my experience, the last couple of companies from Mars that I've been involved with, we know that data is important, but we're still figuring out how we use it. A great example from Mars Petcare in the US is they have like a Fitbit, if you like, for dogs. It's called Whistle, and it's now in the market, and they will use the data that they get from Whistle to enhance the products that they develop. So they can collect the data from the activity that the dog's doing when it's sleeping, its heart rate, et cetera. From an owner's perspective, it's quite fun. I imagine you can see, you know, how active your dog is, and you can keep track of their activity through the day. But I know that Mars Petcare are using this data quite openly to say, we want to understand how we can better develop products that suit the needs of the dogs as we see them today from the activity that we can see them doing. So I think there's all sorts of different ways, if you like, of capturing what we understand about shoppers, consumers, the products that they're interacting with, what they're eating, what they're reading. But I don't know that anybody's really got the absolutely right way of gathering that data. And that actually is the next transformation. That is the next kind of opportunity for FMCG. I mean, we know that other companies are doing it very well, but I don't know that all FMCGs have got the teams in place to harvest data and repurpose it to really drive, opportunities.
Yeah. Well, I sincerely hope Apple doesn't come out with an iWatch for dogs. Otherwise, the cost could go through the roof. It's bad enough with my children asking for all these gizmos. But that's real innovation, isn't it, within the category. We obviously, with the Digital Careers Show, what we try and do is offer insights and advice to people advancing their digital careers. And then we have a brief section on how companies can make their digital hiring more effective. And I'm really interested in your background, because you've obviously moved overseas. You've moved from FMCG to the retail side. You've taken a career break and returned. If you're offering advice to people aspiring to advance their career into the digital world, because there's probably a lot of people in an FMCG sense who are still in the offline channels and quite interested in getting more involved in digital, what advice would you be giving them?
So I mean, there are some amazing, within FMCG, there are some amazing people that are hugely skilled, very knowledgeable, have been working in this field for a long time. So I think, there's a wealth of knowledge out there already. And within most companies, that there's somebody that looks after digital or looks after e-com. So I would say, if you're looking after, more traditional part of the business, so you're looking after in-store for a retailer, and if you're not currently looking at, what does the online or e-commerce opportunity look like for me, if it's not part of what your company's talking about, then I'd say, champion the opportunity and find the ways of bringing that into your everyday role. Within Mars, when I first joined last year, we actually, I asked around and I found out, did a quick poll to find out who was regularly shopping online. And they became my sort of virtual user group, you know, my sort of adopters of online within the Mars business. And they came from all different functions, so finance and marketing and within the sales group, so that we could start to, you know, harness, if you like, the experiences that everybody was having from their own personal journeys online and bring that back into the business to say, right, what does this mean for us? So there are definitely, within every organization, there are going to be people that shop online and they love it, and there are going to be people that want to champion the cause. So I'd say come together, find your people, and think about what the opportunities are. There's also a wealth of podcasts, knowledge, information with, you know, some absolutely amazing people, that really insightful if you're looking at YouTube or, you know, within LinkedIn or any platform that you can think of. So the information is there. It's really a case of just taking some time to have a listen. I would really encourage it. And it's so dynamic. So, you know, this is the other thing that I love about this channel and this space, is it's so dynamic. It changes constantly. And people have the ability to really act with, you know, pace and agility, more so than in store, because you can pretty much have an idea and put it into market much more quickly than if you were trying to organize, you know, something across 2000 stores. The ideas are there for the taking. So I'd say, you know, give it a go and just ask around and do the research.
Let's move on to where you've hired and, you know, hiring within digital. Somebody said last week, I'm quoting another podcast, said that, you know, hiring digital folks isn't easy. There's a relatively small pool and there's a fairly high demand. So what challenges have you encountered and how have you tried to get around those when you've hired within digital in the past? And, you know, we can talk about FMCG or retail really for that matter.
Yeah, my experience of hiring is within FMCG. The hiring that I've done has been more, it was more in its infancy in terms of, I wasn't looking for specific skill sets. I was more looking for attitudes, I suppose, and a willingness to learn. So I think you're right. There's not always people that have the right skill sets, or certainly a couple of years ago, that wasn't necessarily experience, but there was a way of working and a set of attitudes that were absolutely right. And then I think we learnt on the job, including myself, to be completely frank. So there's more experience now. So there's definitely people that have got, you know, a background and a set of, you know, a track record, if you like, that they can say, this is what I've been able to deliver. But I still think the approach of anybody that works within this space, there often isn't a blueprint. So this is something that I think it is pushing boundaries. It's being able to fail fast and, you know, look for ways to correct, course correct, and then move forward. Not everybody's comfortable doing that. And that is something that I think comes through really strongly when you hear anybody talk about working in the e-commerce or the online digital space. There isn't necessarily an absolutely clear-cut roadmap. I mean, there's often a plan and we know where we're heading, but there's also this mindset of, we need to try this and understand the implications are of what we're doing, and if it's successful, we'll move forward and we'll scale. If it's not successful, then we need to stop and work out what we do differently. And there's that ambiguous nature of that not everybody is comfortable with. So I would say, if you've got somebody that's willing to learn, they're really invested in online, they're invested in digital, they're knowledgeable as much as they are, but it's often about attitude and willingness to try and think strategically, think big, you know, where can we get to?
Yeah, it's a good point, actually, because I've certainly encountered a lot of digital natives who take the view that, actually, you know, sometimes some of your biggest successes are learning from the failures, and you have to fail quite a lot in online because you don't have the reference points to work to. And so I completely agree. So what you're saying is it's a sort of a mindset shift on the part of the employer and actually the employee, if they're looking to switch out of offline and into online. It's a different mindset altogether, basically.
I think so. And I think also a willingness to stand alone at times, because you might be having to argue your case quite strongly with people that perhaps don't completely share your vision, and hopefully they'll come around to sharing it. But, you know, the ability to stand alone, to lead, you know, projects or people towards what you can see as your vision is really critical, because not everybody will understand that there isn't a guaranteed deliverable. You know, it's something that's an educated guess based on assumptions that can be documented or based on, you know, previous case studies, but there isn't an absolute definitive result that can be guaranteed. You know, it's about moving forward with pace and agility to understand what happens. So you do need to have pretty big shoulders and be able to sort of square up and say, no, I believe in this and this is what we need to do. And again, that takes some courage. So I'd say, you know, a bold behavior, courage, your ability to move with pace, ability to be flexible where it's needed, and being comfortable being uncomfortable, I suppose, you know, being okay in that space where the ambiguity isn't a concern. It's okay, we'll move forward with what we know. So those are sort of, I suppose, the attitudinal aspects. Obviously, if you have somebody that does have the experience, does have the knowledge, and there are people out there with that as well, then you've got the full package, which is, you know, absolutely amazing.
Well, listen, we've pretty much run out of time. I just thought I'd wrap up and say, first of all, a big thank you, but also just a couple of highlights there for me is just some of those data points that you've referred to are phenomenal. And you know, whilst we all read a lot of newspaper articles, or newspaper is a bit of an old-fashioned term to use, of course, reading online. Media online, but you know, it's very well documented just what's happening out there in grocery retail in particular. And as consumers, we all experience the change ourselves, I suppose. But what you're saying is this is only a trend which is going to continue. And there is a massive opportunity for both FMCG and retail to seriously capitalize on it. I like the plan that you've outlined, that three-step plan that we talked about. I think that would be useful to people tuning into the show. And I think it's an exciting time as much as anything else. And this whole concept of new retail, I think, is something that for companies to be successful and really capitalize on the opportunity, they've got to seriously embrace, and they've got to stand out from the crowd to differentiate themselves. And there's so many things that we could have touched on today that we haven't. You know, it's been a fascinating conversation. I really appreciate you being involved, Sharon.
Oh, pleasure. Thank you, Guy. Good to talk to you as always. Thank you.
Thank you. So I hope you enjoyed the show. Some really incredible data points there on the increase in digital sales for FMCG and grocery retail. Please subscribe to the Digital Careers podcast on any podcast platform or my YouTube channel, Barton Rock. You can also watch the full-length versions on my website, bartonrock.com, via its knowledge section. And if you're looking for advice with your digital career or you're hiring within digital, get in touch with me on guy@bartonrock.com.